Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Motto at Midnight with your host, Motto Sasquatch. Motto is a shaman who works with the written and spoken word. He has played his flute, offers sacred smoke in the four directions. Please join Motto in sacred ceremony. And now, Motto at Midnight.
Thank you, Chief Iggy. My name is Motto Sasquatch. This is Motto at Midnight. Thank you for joining me this evening. I would like to send a shout out to Chief Iggy, who is in Missouri at Great Council this weekend. So hi, Chief Iggy. Hope things are going well there and that you had a pleasant trip. I was on the trip last year, but just a bit too destitute to make it this year. It's quite a happening, as they say. It's the big annual meeting of the Nemenha Church. And there's political functions that go on, and there's social functions, and then there's also a delivery of information to the ministers. The church has been shifting. I'm going to say a tiny little bit about this because this isn't actually my job. I don't want to impinge on Chief Iggy's job at all. He's our communications person, but just an observation on my part that the church has been shifting more towards maybe shifting isn't the right word. We're being asked as ministers to learn more of the Nemenha narrative than we've been asked to do in the past. And so we know a lot about, you know, the bundle ceremony. We know a lot about the medicine wheel, but there's a lot more to the narrative that was revealed to Chief Cloudpiler. And we don't, most of us, frankly, don't know a lot of it. It's kind of like Christians know, you know, they know the Christmas story pretty well, and they know the Easter story pretty well, but the stuff in the middle is kind of hazy. If you're more than a few years out of Sunday school, you probably don't remember. Well, there was a guy with a lot of rain, and there was a guy stuck in a hole with some lions. I remember that. Yeah, what was some of the other stuff that was in there? Since, you know, that'd be a good exercise, actually. I'm going to try and do this myself. We'll sit down and name a dozen Bible stories other than the Christmas story or the Easter story that you remember in some detail. And you'll be able to relate at least a little bit of detail of what was going on and maybe what the purpose of the story was, because these stories in any religion's narrative and any spiritual narrative, the stories always have a purpose. They always lead to something or lead in a direction. So maybe that's if Christianity is your heritage, Christianity happens to be my heritage, perhaps I will do that this week. Now, first, I need to finish the project I promised to do last week, which I haven't done yet. I probably shouldn't be promising new projects when I haven't finished. Last week, if you will recall, I set an intention to do a Shaman Tarot reading, a three-card Shaman Tarot reading about 9/11 and its impact isn't really the word. I noticed, obviously, it carries a lot of significance for Americans, and I thought what I've been observing that day and on social media kind of went beyond that, beyond just recognizing the significance of a day and of a historical event. There seems to be almost a competition as to who can recognize it the best, and also there's a conflict as to what it really means, what's the lesson we should take away from it. So I want to do a reading about that to see if I can get any insight to that. Now, I have worked on it this week. I have not finished it to the degree. What I wanted to do was to create a written document and put it on my blog because I'm trying to do that more often. I haven't gotten to that point, but I have drawn the cards. And since I need to do a Shaman Tarot reading on the show anyway, I was going to share the cards with you that I drew, and maybe just a couple of thoughts, not go too deeply into it, because again, I want to do this properly. I want to do a full reading and write it up and put it on my blog. So it'll be sort of a sneak preview for all the dozens of you out there who might be listening. Probably not even that many. That's fallen into the single digits in recent programs, but sure that now people are coming back from their summer vacations. The audience is going to race right back to their computers and on Friday at midnight and turn on a radio program of some shaman type guy talking about shaman type stuff. But anyway, if there's no one out there, I put my words out into the ether, as they say, at the A-E-T-H-E-R, ether, not the E-T-H-E-R ether that you use to knock people out in gangster movies. I put my words out there because that's my mission, to put my words out there and hope that somehow they land somewhere where they're meant to be. And if that means just broadcasting them out into nothingness, then that's what it means. So anyway, let's do that. We got the Shaman Tarot. We got Walking Dry Places. And I also want to talk to you about experience I had this week in a cave. I went into a cave, not cave exploring. I'm not going to call it that. It was one of these touristy places where they have a cave, and you can go and look at their cave. And shook me in a number of ways. So I want to get that done too. But let's look at the Shaman Tarot first. And I've drawn three cards. First of all, if you haven't heard me do this before, Shaman Tarot is tarot. It's the spiritual card you read. Some people would call it read your fortune. That's not exactly what it is. But the Shaman Tarot is just a standard tarot deck using shaman symbolism rather than whatever symbolism is. It's not a standard tarot deck. I don't even know. You have the cups and the swords and all that standards, and they have here, they have stones and bows and what else do they have? Well, anyway, what else they have? Other than that, it's got the four suits of cards and then the what's called the major arcana, which is sort of a fifth suit I don't know if it's like a hierarchy. I know so little about this. The deck itself was presented to me by Chief Iggy because he wanted me to work on my reading skills, because whenever I would get on one of his radio shows, he'd ask me to do a reading, and I said, I don't do readings. Well, he gave me this set of cards for, I think, for Christmas last year. And he said, start doing readings. So here I am. I drew three cards. The first thing is you're going from left to right, that the cards are the past, present, and future. And that doesn't necessarily indicate that this happened in the past, this happened in the present, this happened in the future. It just gives you a direction, because the idea of the multiple card reading is that you're supposed to be able to draw some sort of through line that either indicates where things are going or just some sort of sense of a direction. So starting on the left with the past, we have the Six of Stones, and he is, let me flip away madly here, no, that's not it. I really do need to memorize these things. Where are you? I had this moments ago before we went on the air. Okay, so the stones are themselves as a group. They're the element of water, and they correspond to the cups in the traditional tarot, according to this. And we're definitely going to find it. There's the bones. The stones, they stand for healing. The Six of Stones is the return of the soul. Even in suffering, a new harmony flows in the depths. Ancient memories, once removed, come to the surface, bringing wonder and nostalgia. And that's the past card. It's a man in primitive dress looking at himself in a mirror, and the mirror is mostly broken. He can still see his face, and some sort of large cat is standing at his feet. So, perhaps you think of that as the end of things, maybe. maybe, when we get into it. The second card I drew, the present card, is number 7 from the Major Arcana, which says the spinning shield. Nothing exists outside of this life, death, or rebirth. Successful action, awareness in guiding one's own energies, physical and mental voyages. And I know I saw those words, successful action. I said, boy, you could get into some controversy on that, couldn't you? They're saying that this is the present card about 9/11, and it symbolizes successful action. I guess it's successful for a small group of people. You begin to see what I mean. The picture is of a falling man. He's falling past or with or on top of a disc with masks of faces on it. There's a tempesty sky behind him, and there are two horses, one black and one white, rather upset underneath him. So that's the past card. The future card is also a Major Arcana card, the 27, which is the Path of the Stars. The silent guide that comes from above. Inspiration, listening to an inner voice. Benefits for the soul, spirituality, and nostalgia for the past. So that's what I have to work with. And I'm going to try and construct that. Not really construct, because I guess I use what's there and try to align it. And then you see in the past card they talk about nostalgia, which seemed to be more of a future thing. So I got to see why is that stuck in the past, and why does that form the beginning of the arc that I'm going to try to divine from these cards. Okay. So anyway, I've shared the cards with you. At least we've gotten that far. Again, my question is, what is it that we're to draw from the experience of 9/11? The point is, what am I? I'll speak for myself. What am I supposed to be learning from this? There's an enormity. It's not probably not meant only for me. I would imagine it's not meant only for me. But perhaps my experience, and I don't want to talk about this too much longer because I spent the whole show last week talking about 9/11, basically the whole show. It's an event that a lot of people find very upsetting. Certainly I find it rather upsetting. And it would certainly seem there should be something that could be drawn from it, you know, not necessarily some sort of resolution like aha, now I know. But what is this mess that kind of travels along with it now? And what do we learn from that? And is there something we can do about that? But obviously there isn't something we can do about that. That's sort of wishful thinking on my part. And anyway, I've got these cards. I'm going to work on it. You're going to watch my blog for when I put it up. I will... put it on my Facebook page when I do. That's Mud Toe Sasquatch. If you want to take a look at all things Mud Toe, that's where you can find them. And then the blog itself is mudtoesasquatch.com. So that's that. Really, I was kind of hoping to derive a bit more satisfaction from that than I did. I was hoping at least one of the cards would just kind of jump off of me and say, aha, I can, there's the place that I can start from. But these three cards, interesting though they are not. I'm not seeing that. I'm going to have to think about it more. And I know I've tried to do readings like this in the past, and they've never gone very well. I seem to get better readings when I just do them about myself or about something that I'm feeling. When I have some sort of broader question, I seem to get cards that don't really mean anything to me. So maybe that's the connection. I mean, the reading is, I'm doing the reading. Maybe the reading has to be about me. I think I did a reading for someone who called in once, and that went pretty well too, which I think is the direction that Chief Iggy is trying to push me in. Doing the same, maybe not doing the same, that's not quite fair. But basically all the other shows on blog on on withinsightsradio.com right now is our, about people doing readings of one sort or another. I thought maybe we should have one show that's a little bit different. But on the other hand, you know, it is about spirituality, and it is certainly a skill that I could cultivate. So we'll do that. We're cultivating. We're digging farm, or what do they call it? Corn rows. We're digging corn rows in my brain. Ready, and my brain will burst forth with the wisdom of the ages. Okay, never mind. Let's talk about this cave thing. I went with a friend to a cavern called the Olentangy Indian Caverns, which is nearby where I live. And it's typical, and I've been to caves before. This isn't the first time. When I was a kid, you know, you go, and you just walk down. You know, it's like you walk down a few flights of steps, and it's kind of rocks around you. You know, it's but it's not anything too horribly intimidating. I mean, there's plenty of room over your head and plenty of room off the sides, and you're there with a guide, and the guide takes you down there. And there's, you know, there's light bulbs, and you can see around you, and the guide tells you where you need to step and what you need to do to not get lost. And they point out, you know, they got little lights actually mounted next to the sort of features they want to show you. Like, here's a rock that looks like a bunny rabbit, and here's one that looks like a rocket ship, you know, that kind of thing. And the light goes on. Ooh, there's the formations, and they tell you again how many thousands of years it took to create them. And you know, if you went over there and knocked it off, that would be it, you know, and never come back again. So let's shake our fingers at the people who came down here in the early days and just messed with all the cave formations and broke them off and took them out of the caves. And now there's just holes where those used to be. Standard kind of touristy stuff. And then there's also, you know, the cave, ash cave that we go to for our drummings 4 times a year, which is more, I mean, it's a cave. I don't know how you call it anything but a cave. But it doesn't. It's not underground. It's a cave that's above ground. It's like carved out of the side of a big rock, very 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 large rock, and a deep gouge in the side that you can actually stand in, and is many many feet above your head. And when you go in there with a bunch of drums, the sound is just absolutely astonishing. And you're standing on sand. You know, the ground underneath you is sand. It's ground up stone from the, you know, from the rocks surrounding you, and there's a waterfall, the river that did all of that digging and forming of rock is still there. It's off to one side, you know, it's chewed through the rock, and now it's over another side, and still kind of pouring into a pool. It's very I find it very spiritual to go there, and I don't go there as much as my friends do, because you know, we carpool, which certainly is the correct thing to do. But when you carpool with somebody, I'm not the one who drives, because my car is a mess. I mean, we got this year and had things wrong with it before. I didn't really trust it. We generally go to Iggy's car, in Iggy's car. But anyway, when you go with somebody else, you know, then you can't leave. You're stuck until they want to leave. And I'm in any situation like this, particularly when we're outdoors in February. I'm typically the first person who wants to leave, and I end up having to wait until someone else wants to go. So I don't go to it probably maybe as often as I should have. But those are my experiences with caving. So I go to this this place, and there are many, many places around here like this. There's a lot of caves. We go up there, and they have, you know, there's a gift shop. And a little, the word I want to call it is a sluice. It's one of these things with the water that runs down, and it goes in several levels, and it's something that you use for panning for gold or for gems or whatever. And they have, that's one of the things you can do there, because they seed the dirt, you know, with little things they can find. And there's a putt-putt golf course in the back, and then there's a cave. So you go in and you tell me, oh, do you want to pan for gold? Do you want to play a putt-putt golf, or do you want to look at the cave? So we wanted to look at the cave, my friend and I. So we plunk down our $9.95, and first thing is there's no guide. This is the era of things being cut back. This is the era of luxuries, so-called luxuries, being taken away. And then the guide, the person who actually knows something about the cave and can tell you about it, is considered to be a luxury now. Or it could be a volume thing. They just don't have enough people going through there anymore to justify it. In any case, you just go. They direct you out to where the cave entrance is, which kind of, I mean, don't they like check, like, I wish they would have given us something, some to clip on our belts or something that would send like a GPS signal so they would know where we were. We're still downstairs in the, we're still down in the cave when they went to leave that night. But no, they just sent us down to the cave. And there was a small building. It was kind of a museum. And there were some artifacts, so there were some artifacts that were borrowed from other museums, and there were some artifacts that they had actually pulled out of the cave. And there was an interesting mix of actual Native American artifacts and sort of fake white guys, European Indian artifacts, you know, like totem poles and that sort of thing. Anyway, took a look at that, and then it's time. Okay, you know, there's a little door, and you go through, and there's the entrance to the cave. And I tell you, I had known that this existed, but I'd never actually seen it. Some caves, you know, like I said, that one at Ash Cave is just, you know, carved out of the side of a big rock, and then other ones that I've been to were just sort of underneath the ground, and you went, it was very sort of level and horizontal. This cave was vertical. It goes 60 feet straight down, and they got these little rickety steps going down, and you gotta climb down the steps. Well, I almost said I have a problem with heights. I don't have a problem with I don't have a fear of heights at all. I have a fear of falling. So I'm clutching onto the handrail and lowering myself down bodily step by step, just in absolute terror. But at the same time, and this is what fascinates me about the experience and the reason I'm really, really, really glad I did it, I was aware that what I was experiencing was terror. I could put that name on it, whereas otherwise I would have just been lost in the terror and just, please just end this, somehow get out, run back up the stairs, do whatever, somehow get out of this space. Okay, this is terror. I recognize this. You know, what's happening with me? You know, my heart is racing. I'm breathing hard. My legs hurt because I'm putting way too much pressure on them. I'm trying to ease down the you know, make sure I'm stuck to the stairs so I can't fall off. And of course, oh, that's the other thing. Of course, you're in a cave. The stairs are all wet. And I know this. My shoes that I have are fairly new. I hadn't put any thought into it. I wouldn't have had a choice anyway. These are the only shoes I have. But I had been wearing for a long time just a pair of older shoes, and all of the tread had worn off of them. And any time I walked on anything wet, it was like ice skating. So that was my thing. I hadn't actually checked in this new pair of shoes if I had any more kind of tread than I had before. I mean, so I'm thinking I could get down halfway down the staircase and just, you know, flip, and my feet would be above my head. I would be tumbling down the stairs to the bottom. It was 60 feet. They said the drop to the first level of the cave was 60 feet. So you crawled down these stairs to get to the bottom, and then there were some. It was nicely lit. You know, they didn't hang us up in that way. But again, nobody down there. Just some arrows pointing, you know, which way. This is passage one. This is passage two. This, you know, you're supposed to follow them one through five, and then the number five will bring you back, you know, to the stairs. You can climb back up. We also went into some lower levels. There was a second level at about 80 feet, we were told, and then a third level at about 110 feet. So you kept going down these stairs, you know, and one of the stairs went through a very narrow, like, I'm not a small person, and I had to turn sideways. And then when I was sideways, I couldn't get both of my feet on one of the stairs at the same time. So I'm kind of going down the stairs, you know, two at a time, and then scooting down. And I know I had to have touched the cave walls. And they always tell you don't touch the cave walls, because whatever's happening on the cave walls, you know, they're getting carved away by the water or whatever. Your grease from your fingers gets on the walls, and that stops, and then you've ended the formation of the cave at that spot forever. Well, I had, I wasn't going to die to save the cave. So I scooted down. And I remember taking some time when I got to that very lowest level to think about all the people who had used the, the settlers, the 17th, 18th, 19th century settlers had used the cave to hide in and to hide things in. A lot of things had been found there over the years. But then the Native Americans had used it before that, too. The Wyandotte Indians had used it. And then the Hopewells, the an even older tribe, had there's evidence that they had used it before them. So we're going back about 1,000 years that people have been in these caves, on a regular basis, using them for something. All of that, I was always became sort of enthralled by the energy on the Oval at Ohio State. The place that's been there for 100 years, more than 100 years. And all the students that have walked across that over the years, and that's, my feeling is that a little piece of their energy is still there, and you can feel it, especially at night when it's relatively quiet. You can feel that all those people crisscrossing that over the years. Well, this was not 100 years, but 1,000 years worth of human beings in these caverns, in this close confined space, and. That was, and then to be there in that sort of very stressed physical state, it filled me with a kind of energy that I've never felt before, and just so grateful to have had that experience. I don't want to do it again. I don't think I would ever go back again. But, and they told us, this is what we found out after we'd come out, that there is a deeper level that's 600 feet below the surface. But there's no way to get people down that far safely. And I thought, well, if they consider that staircase safe, then I'm glad they're not trying to make us. It said that the Native Americans used to go down there on ropes that they had made because they didn't have stairs. So they just go down there on ropes. And then the way that white people first found it was some guy was cultivating the field and his ox stepped in the cave and fell, the 60 feet to the bottom. And of course, there was no way to retrieve it. And the local powers that be ordered that the cave be filled up, that the entrance be stopped up so that those things wouldn't happen again. And then that was reversed at some point. I think they just wanted to. When they wanted to open up the cave for people to see. And they said, lo and behold, the skeleton of the ox was still down there. Beautiful stories, wonderful stories. I'm still sitting here with the abiding image of that, opening that door. My expectation being there'll be a nice staircase, just going down and looking down into this deep hole. With this, and just open all around you, no sort of you don't have the security of stuff around you, and then you get down actually into the passages, and of course, it's very close when you're in the passages. Much of it's very very close, and you say, "Well, did I actually want the walls to be this close? Maybe not this close. Be a little bit further out. You don't get to dictate exactly what your cave's walls are." Going to be, I guess. Okay, as usual, blew right by Walk and Dry Places, but we'll make sure to get to it early on the program next time. This is one of those shows that's just, I don't feel like quite got to what I wanted to get to. But then, it's really not what I want to get to. I'm just trying to stay in line with the expectations that Spirit has set and that the intentions that Spirit has sent. So, I talked about my cave, and that was a big thing that happened to me this week. So I talked about my cave, and I talked about this Shaman Tarot reading that I'm working on that I really need to spend more time on. So I guess that covers it for this week. Please join me next week, where I'll have some more wonderful stuff to talk about, more lifey kind of stuff. But I hope it won't involve crawling down in a hole. That's it. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you soon. Have a pleasant good evening.